My name is Victor Kubik. Welcome to another edition of Inside United. Today we have a guest that I am very well acquainted with. His name is John Elliott. He is a longtime minister who has served many congregations around the world. We have tracked our careers for the last 40-some years or more. He's been a person that's not only been a pastor of congregations, but he's been a skilled teacher and mentor and established congregations in Kenya and established training. Welcome, John.
Thank you very much. It's really an honor to be here with you today.
John has been a mentor to people individually, and I feel like one of the ways that which he has really been helpful is in establishing training in Africa, in particular in Kenya. And I also was senior pastor over congregations in Malawi and Zambia for a while, and I took John's material that he had about how to teach local congregations, how to teach local pastors and new pastors about how to run a church. So, John, tell us about mentoring.
Really, all of us, anyone hearing this, mentoring is something that is really invaluable for one application. And this is the key. Mentoring isn't teaching. Teaching is teaching. Mentoring isn't training someone necessarily. That's training. Maybe training to do a job or to run a piece of equipment. Mentoring, by its real definition, means to get rid of something that
what?
You don't want. Let's look at a biblical example, okay? Just a real top-level biblical example. Jesus Christ had 12 disciples, and he mentored them so he could stop doing what he was doing, and he could go do something else. So he came to earth as a human being, and he had some things to do here, but he didn't want to stay here and keep doing them. He wanted to relieve himself of those responsibilities. Now, what were those responsibilities? Well, he was an ambassador of a foreign kingdom, a kingdom of heaven, to the kingdoms on this earth, as it were. And he also was a representative of that kingdom himself and how he lived. And so he called disciples to him, and he lived with them for 3.5 years, not only teaching them, teaching was a part of it, not only modeling it to them, but he had them participate to the point where he then said, now you are lights of the world, and I want you to go as ambassadors into all nations. I'm going to go do something else. Mm-hmm. Now, he didn't abandon them. He continues to partner with those representatives through the Holy Spirit living in us. He's still the head of the body, obviously, very engaged. And yet the day-to-day work that humans did relieved him of that human effort. Now, when we think of that in almost any application here on earth, there are times when you want to be relieved of what you're doing, and so you mentor someone. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they're going to be a clone of what you are, but they're going to take over that responsibility. That can be parenting a child to where you no longer have to parent them. They can now step out in life. They can live their own life, but you want to not just preach at them, mm-hmm. you know, tell them a whole bunch of stuff. Give them a bunch of rules and kick them out the door. You want to actually have said, look, here's how to do it. Watch me. Now let's do it together. Now you do it.
I don't consider myself to be the best mentor. I have a hard time delegating, first of all.
Yeah.
You know, I have a hard time letting go because I feel so responsible for things. Mm-hmm. I would think that would be in a mentor's mind, as part of his mindset, is I've got to let go, too, not only from the standpoint of to do other things, but to also show trust in the people that will carry on what you have been doing.
You know, this is all part of that original thing. If you don't want to be relieved of it, you can't effectively mentor. Mm-hmm. And we, particularly as men, sometimes we want to hang on to something. Maybe it's our identity. We'll train somebody or teach them up to a point, but we never let go. We won't release it. And so there's a real challenge with a new person coming on and being able to have responsibility. I mean, real responsibility, to be trusted with that responsibility and to take it in their own directions. But when you have, I don't know, I guess it's the confidence to say, look, I'm teaching you what I know principle-wise. We're going to experience it together, and then you're going to do it, and I'm comfortable to leave you with that responsibility. That is a gift to give someone else. You give it to your children as they grow up all the way through. You give it to friends, to employees, to almost anybody. And, of course, in the ministry, this is a real important need. You look at a new generation and a generation beyond that that's coming up. And sometimes these individuals just have to wait because the spots are clogged. And I'm not one of those. I'm retiring this summer by desire and busily training and mentoring two individuals to fully, you know, step into my place. And that's what we should all be doing, really, wherever we have the opportunity.
Well, one of the most remarkable mentor jobs that you have done has been passing on a baton, if you will, in Kenya or East Africa, where you have worked. You were able to pass on to another person who is your assistant, but you were able to turn it over effectively to him because we work with him.
Mm-hmm.
Could you tell us what was going on in your mind as you prepared him? Also, I'd like you to talk a little bit about some of the other people you mentored in East Africa, I should say.
Yeah, what really dawned on me was a senior pastor made 4 visits a year to 8 countries who had no elder, no ordained deacon, and no established congregations. So each visit was a huge amount of work and effort. And imagine showing up there and also having to do 100 baptism counselings, because you're the only one who can. And on one feast, where you're the feast coordinator, the main speaker, you've got international guests there, you've got family who came, everybody wants a piece of you, 50 baptisms.
Mm-hmm.
And I just realized I need to divest myself of some of these responsibilities so that I can focus on being senior pastor. So that's where it began. And Monty was actually at that very first feast.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was. That was the feast of 2003. Actually, we were following you there in Mombasa. If you recall, you had been there in the 90s.
In 1992.
92. And we were on the exact feast site, the exact stage.
Right on the ocean.
That's right. And Monty's son, Rio, I think he was 11 or 12 at the time. And I mentored him and gave him all the translation headsets at the feast. That was his responsibility. And he rose to the challenge and organized that for the whole feast. So that's what I like to do. It's not an age group thing. It's no limitations. Who will show the interest and who will take this on? Let's work with them and then let's give it to them. Mm-hmm. I didn't even want to know how you do it after the fact. You do it your way and it'll work. So through the years, Monty had come over several times with me. And he was very loving and very interested in the people, developed relationships, and he was always trying to help in any way that he could. And so after 15 years of that went by, it became just automatic that here's the man with the heart, with the skills, with the knowledge, and I had been working with him along that line. I asked you if we could transfer him into that position. And then I stepped back and I've just been an advisor. And if he gets to a point where he has a question or wants to involve me in something, then I'm there to help out. Mm-hmm. So it's a great relationship.
You said there were no churches or congregations. What kind of a long-range plan did you have? Because there were quite a few people, probably upwards of 800 people or so in Kenya.
We had a lot of people showing interest all over the place, but there was no organization.
Mm-hmm.
There was just a visitation, you might say, of whenever there was an interest, somebody would let it be known and you'd show up at this group. And sometimes it was just, if it was really rural, it was just that they kind of were curious to see what a white man looked like and what he might say and whether they would bring a free lunch, which we always did. So there were a lot of people, but it didn't mean there was, you know, any real depth to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a matter of then beginning to look at the model that the church has always used, and certain church leaders, then I would go and I would talk with them about that. How do you set this up? Well, look at the church model. Oh, just follow the church model that we use everywhere, which is essentially, we have a structure, we have basic ways that we establish our feasts, basic ways that you set up and you run an organization. So now start praying and developing people for those positions and those roles and start organizing it along that way. We even took our church literature, got Peter Eddington to give us the mock-up of, mm-hmm. of each, and we copied that and we translated into four different languages in East Africa, Kenya and Tanzania and Uganda. And
it was Swahili?
Swahili, Dua Lua. We did some Luya.
Oh, yeah.
And also some Kisi language.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it was, and we did our hymnals. We did a lot of things like that.
We founded those areas that were former British colonies or former British, what do they call them?
Commonwealth nations.
Commonwealth nations and protectorates and that type of thing. That there was a lot of English influence and overriding English language as the legal language. We found that most of the men spoke it real well, but oftentimes the women did not.
Yes, yeah. Lack of education. Mm-hmm. And that's an important part of East Africa, is understanding that they're British trained, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. they have that understanding of the British mindset, as do people in Canada. And that's a cultural thing that is to be honored and respected, and I really do. And I enjoy that wherever we go. So we're not trying to Americanize everybody by any means. Mm-hmm. We're trying to look at the local values, how they understand that, and then to give them an example that they can then utilize in their congregations. They'll rise up. God will show us who needs to be ordained where. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, you're trusting people pastoring in different countries and different congregations with total trust. Mm-hmm. And you know what it's like to have a ministerial conference, a leaders conference, where you all come together. It's just the same. The language may be a little different, but God's members, His Holy Spirit, and the leadership, it's just wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I love it when you talk about Central Eastern Africa, if we can call it that, and the amount of time you have and the love that you have there. It's just family. It really is.
It really is. You know, with this COVID crisis, I have not been on a plane in over a year. Last trips I've taken were February of exactly a year ago. And my wife and I really yearn to go back to Africa because those people are like family. We really miss them very, very much. I'd like to turn a little bit to mentorship here in the United States. I know that you have worked and sent us a prototype of a curriculum for developing ministers and also for enriching ministers. But what is your view of how we could further develop ministry in the United States?
Well, there's a two-prong approach here, and I'll speak to one, but I'll speak about the other. Here at the home office, you have an excellent team who is great at teaching and developing teaching materials and resource materials. I've never had that, but I've leaned on that and utilized that as part of the teaching and the training that we do in foreign countries. You're sharing a lot of information at those times, and that information is great. One key individual is really sharp about that is Darris McNeely in mm-hmm. developing those materials. So we have a lot of materials. The other thing, though, is more of a localized matter, and that's the application of transferring responsibility to another individual. That's where the mentoring comes in. And I can't give a mentoring program to someone because as much as I've tried, I've even, made out lessons. Those are teaching lessons. A mentoring program is actually you and I, we dwell together like Jesus did with the disciples, or like a relative or friends or a company employee or a pastor and a trainee, whatever the application is. You actually have to dwell together. And it's not just, I'm going to tell you how to do this and then leave. It's, we're going to do this together. Watch how I do this. I think my great mentor was Bert Poole in British Columbia back in 1977. I took flying lessons. Now, Bert Poole taught me, but he also mentored me. He was right there in the seat next to me. And he would fly the plane, and then he would say, all right, I want you to just turn what we might call the steering wheel, the yoke, turn mm-hmm. it back and forth. I'll do all the rest. And then he would say, okay, today I want to teach you the rudder pedals with the yoke. And then there would be throttle, and then there would be one thing at a mm-hmm. time. But he would be right there with me, helping me and then having me do it. And at one time we landed and Bert said, pull over here. And he just pulled over there. And he got out of the airplane and as he closed the door, he said, now you go fly. Wow. That was my solo. And I wasn't expecting it. Mm-hmm. And I realized at that point that I had been mentored to know what to do, but my flight would be different than anything we'd ever done. Mm-hmm. And as I took off, everything was different because I didn't have his weight in the little plane. Popped off the ground and shot up in the air. I was in a whole new experience, but I had the applications mm-hmm. and the understanding. I was so excited, I even yelled out, I said, I can kill myself. Because he would never let me do that with him in the plane, but now I really had responsibility. Uh-huh. And so whenever a person is mentored and then actually given the responsibility, that's what it is. I can crash or I can succeed or I can do all these things, but now I have that opportunity and the weight of responsibility, and that individual will soar mm-hmm. from that point on. They will really soar.
Well, I know that in the United Church of God, we're going to have to provide that type of mentorship. We have new people that we are bringing on into the ministry, people in their 20s. Mm-hmm. Which is the way it used to be. When I started the ministry, I was 21 years old. Can you believe 21 years old? I can't believe that somebody would be, you know, allowed to be that young. But I had 3 years of, I would say, hands-on training by others, under three different people. Hmm. Kind of worked out that way. And I felt like the very first person that I worked with, he was a person who was extremely patient and could take all the time needed to talk to people. And spend up to 2 hours, you know, just talking and sitting on a hot porch, you know. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was difficult, frankly, for a young person to be able to kind of hold himself in and listening to that. And I know that I learned a lot from that. The second person that I worked for, you know, he let me have a lot more hands-on things, but he had me write letters for him. I really learned to succinctly put my thoughts on paper. The third one was someone who taught me projects. You know, he was a district superintendent. And he had 5-6 pastors over on a Monday, you know, that he would align work for them. And I was very curious in how he did it, how he laid things out. So I felt very fortunate in my life to have people that taught me those skills. And I'm sure that in your life, too, that you've started out, too, with people that were mentors that taught you how to mentor.
Yes and no. Let's just, for the audience's sake here, share our two experiences. You had very good mentoring. I almost had none. Mm. And here's why. At age 22, I was sent into the field in British Columbia, and I was placed under an individual who didn't involve me in anything. Mm. And honestly, I can't remember really doing anything with him where he let me do anything other than go along with him. And one day, surprise, surprise, the regional director showed up and ordained me a minister. And then I got my own church under a regional director that was too busy. And so he just made me the pastor a year later and said, you know, the way we do this is we kind of throw you in and let you swim, and if you can't figure it out, we'll pull you up, let you catch your breath, and throw you back in again. And that did not honestly serve me well. So there's been a lot of discovery along the way. And so some of this has had to be, you know, figured out. I remember when Roy Holiday back in, I forget, 2005, Roy Holiday or 2004 gave a seminar to the ministry about mentoring, and he talked about what it was, and I'd never heard this before. Hmm. So that's when I went and started reading about mentoring and what it was, and I had that direct application just begging over in East Africa in 2004, and that's how I got involved in that. So it's wonderful that you had that, and look where you've come with that versus a person who didn't have that, and look perhaps at how I've struggled through the years or have not had the same foundation as far as ministry goes. A lot of it's had to be discovered or watch other people.
Yeah, but John, one thing about you that I've always found is that you've always wanted to learn on your own, whether it was a technical thing, you know, mm-hmm. some computer thing or some technical thing or flying, or you've had that, you had a passion for it, and so you've forced yourself to learn it because you wanted to learn it. And so part of teaching and mentoring is having a passion for it.
And finding someone who has a passion. I grew up without much money or opportunity, so when I wanted like electronics as a teenager, what I did was I would go out and watch people throwing their trash away. And if somebody had dumped something that didn't work, I could haul it home and figure out how to fix it. And so by the time I was 16, 17, I had a color TV, I had a stereo, I was doing some radio things, but I didn't know what I was doing because I was self-taught. When I showed up at Ambassador College, they caught me staring at a panel of electronics for in one of their studios, and I wasn't supposed to be there, but I was so curious, and I was staring at it, and I heard a voice behind me, "So you understand sound equipment." Mm-hmm. And they immediately hired me and put me in the radio studio, and eventually I wanted to be in television production in Pasadena. That's how I got there. So I've had this mm-hmm. internal quest without really the training. I'm that kind of person. I do like to figure things out, mm-hmm. but it's much better to have a mentor.
Yeah, it is. I know there's certain things that I was mentored in, other things I figured out. I had a passion for developing websites, for example.
Yeah, you did.
Yeah. Anything else you'd like to say, John, to
our... I'd just like to encourage anyone that has the, you might say, the confidence to give something away to someone else, to go ahead and explore that and find the right person who's interested in it, and then really show them how to do it, then do it with them, and then let them show you how they do it. And you will have enriched a life, you will have perhaps given away a responsibility, or at the least, you will have duplicated the number of people doing that responsibility.
Well, John, it's been really great having you on Inside United today. And I'd like to thank our audience for joining us and listening to this podcast. Be sure to tell your friends about Inside United. You can find us on the homepage of ucg.org. Go to the main menu bar and click or tap on podcast. Also, use your favorite Apple or Android app to have the podcast show up automatically. I have it come up on Pocket Casts on Android. Also, we're on Spotify. Go to Spotify, go to podcasts, and search for Inside United. And if you have any questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear from our listeners. Write to us at podcast@ucg.org, podcast@ucg.org. So thank you very much for being with us. Be sure to come back soon for more.
This is a production of the United Church of God. For more, visit ucg.org.